Hello, everyone. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Welcome to the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. I am Brian Dinovellis, and we are brought to you by Mike Supa of RE/MAX Revolution. If you're looking to buy, sell, or list a home down the Jersey Shore in Monmouth and Ocean Counties, give Mike a call, 201-988-2577, and tell Mike that Brian sent you from the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. So, coaches like to say the Christmas dinner tastes a whole lot better when you win your last game before Christmas. The figgy pudding tastes sweeter. By the way, what is figgy pudding? Have you ever had figgy pudding? Have you ever seen figgy pudding? Does it have figs in it? Does anybody know? I will probably go my entire lifetime without having figgy pudding, and I'll be happy. But let's just say the tapioca pudding tastes sweeter. The pumpkin pie tastes sweeter. Whatever your Christmas dessert is, the chocolate tort tastes sweeter. You know what I'm getting at. The dinner just tastes better. How's UConn's dinner? Oh yeah, really good. St. John's, 5-course meal, delicious. Princeton, oh, fit for a king, right? Rutgers, ooh, little sour taste there. Seton Hall, oh boy. I'm not sure the last time they enjoyed a post-game meal, all right? How about Central Connecticut? Oh, hell yes. What a job head coach Patrick Sellers is doing in hard-hitting New Britain, Connecticut. The Central Connecticut Blue Devils had quite a week last week as they knocked off a pair of in-state foes in Fairfield and Quinnipiac. Quinnipiac, oh, by the way, predicted to finish first in the MAC, and CCSU goes 2-0 against MAC foes last week. So Central is now 8-4. That's 8. Count them, 8 non-conference wins. They're most in the non-con since joining the NEC back in 97. And here to talk about the week that was and the season that is the head coach of the Central Connecticut Blue Devils, Patrick Sellers. Coach, welcome back to the program. Great to see you. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Brian, Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to doing this.
Yeah, no, hey, thank you so much. And you know, I listen, Central Connecticut, just to give a little background, it's near and dear to my heart. You know, growing up in Hartford, Connecticut, I used to go to Central Connecticut games quite a bit. I mean, my family members that graduated from there, my brother Craig, my sister Tina, my brother-in-law Greg, my cousin Rob, my aunt Laureen, you know, so many people went to Central Connecticut, and I would go in a little Dietrich gymnasium and watch them play when they were D2. I was you know, there when they played Manute Bowl in Bridgeport.
Right,
and
yeah.
I'm telling you, my senior year, I know I went and saw Tyrone Canino and those guys, and my senior year of high school, I saw those teams, that team that you were on, that freshman team. So it's great to see you guys having this much success.
Yeah, it's been a fun year so far. You know, again, I said it before, you know, we have 4 4-year seniors, which is really rare nowadays. And those guys kind of set the tone with the program. They set a standard, and everybody has to live by it. You know, Jaden Brown, Devontae Swetman, Jarrell Strowski, and Abdul Momo are really the culture of our program. Those guys were here 4 years ago. They won 8 games as a group. You know, I told them before that season started, I said, fellas, we're going to get picked last. We know it. Let's try and get better every day, try to win the day every day. And that's what they did starting back as freshmen. And now 4 years later, you know, 4 years later, they're seniors, and they're really having a, you know, it's been good so far. So we just got to keep it rolling.
I spoke to Jim Engels a couple of weeks ago, head coach at Columbia, and he said the same thing. It's almost like you guys are on the similar paths here, you know, keeping these guys, taking your lumps as freshmen and sophomores and seeing the fruits of your labor as seniors. Do you know Jimmy and what he's going through?
Oh, how about this? So our first scrimmage as a new staff at Central Connecticut was Columbia. Columbia came to Dietrich and we scrimmaged each other, and
Wow.
it was two awful teams. Jimmy and I talk about it all the time. So I saw them last summer, and they had a really good year last year, and then same with us. And I was like, "Hey, man, if people could find look at that tape of the two teams back then, they would be laughing." And
Right.
now, both teams have grown. They're having a great year. They're having a great year. So, I follow those guys all the time.
That is awesome. I love that. I wish I could get a handle on that scrimmage tape that you had there. A lot of miscues.
Oh yeah, it was funny, man. Actually, Abdul Momo, literally his sec the second possession, he checked in the game. He goes up and down on offense, come back on defense, jumps up for a rebound, boom, tears his foot. He only played three games that year,
Oh.
so it was just a crazy, crazy, situation. He was a freshman. We were young. We didn't know what we were doing as a staff, as players, and again, we've all grown in that time span.
Yeah, no, great stuff, coach. And so I asked Jim the same question, in this day and age, right, with transfers and NIL and how much can I get, how were you able to convince these guys, all the core four there, right? Core four to stay with you at
Yeah,
Central.
it's amazing because usually most of the guys, as soon as the season's over, we have our exit meetings right away. And, I said, let us know, are you in or out? And, I said, I'm gonna give you a week and then we got to get moving. And these guys, those guys really, they believed in what we were saying. They really liked Central Connecticut. They liked the family atmosphere we have, the culture we have with the program. They like the coaching staff is really great, so, and they all got better. These guys like watching film on and off the court. They got better. We've had 6 full semesters. This is our 7th semester. We're waiting on our grades now, but 6 full semesters, and we've had a 3.0 team GPA in 4 out of the 6. And it's because of these guys. These guys go to class. They do the right thing. They genuinely like each other. So, I'm sure people talk to him. You should go in the portal and this and that. But those four guys, they stuck it out, and they're good things are happening for them. And we brought in 8 guys that year. One guy graduated. A couple got one kid was from Arizona. He's actually playing for Northern Arizona. He's playing great. He wanted to get back closer to home. I didn't blame him. And then the other couple other guys put their name in the portal, but those core four stayed, and I'm happy they did.
Oh, that is fantastic. And look, there's no, I don't care how much talent you bring in there, if you don't have the chemistry and build that chemistry, it's hard to win. So there's a lot to be said for old school, sticking together chemistry type of stuff.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Like Frank Martin at UMass, like we're good. We talk a lot. We're good friends, and he just says, "Pat, I'm jealous of you because you got a group of you're like it's old school. You got a group of guys who came in as freshmen. They work. They get better. They get better. Now they're seniors, and they're the hard work is paying off for them." And he's like, "For the most part, college basketball now is a portal and the NIL, so guys are just jumping. It's the next who can give you the next check." So we've been fortunate. Like we've been lucky, we've been fortunate, and I'm just happy these four guys are here because they set the tone for us. And with those four guys staying, we've had a couple of transfers that transferred in, and they've stayed, and I think they've stayed because of the four guys who've been here. So
Yeah.
we've been fortunate.
Well, fantastic. 8-4, as I said, in the first 12 games. Let's talk about the week that was here. I'm sure you looked at this schedule last Sunday and said, all right, you know what? Let's roll up our sleeves. Fairfield, Quinnipiac, two powerhouses from the MAC. Let's take them one at a time. So let's start with that game against Fairfield. That was really back and forth, and you needed one final defensive stand to win a game on the road at Fairfield.
Our director of analytics, Jeremy Brown, he's always forward thinking. So he comes in and said, "Hey, coach, this is a huge week for us. We got two MAC opponents. They're two good teams, well coached." Chris Casey at Fairfield coached me when I was a freshman. He was a grad assistant on that team when I was a freshman with Tyrone Canino. And actually, we went to Fairfield. This is old school, 87, and we. Wayne Campbell makes a layup, a putback layup to win the game. and we're jumping up celebrating or whatever. And CJ Jones, who ended up being the athletic director, was the assistant,
Yes,
tore
yes.
his Achilles in the celebration. So he walked in the locker room. I'm like, what happened to CJ? So it was crazy. But that Fairfield game, I coached there for 2 years. I know Coach Casey. I've known him forever. Great friend, great coach. Glenn Breaker on the staff. Taj Benning, our coach at Fairfield. They have a great staff. And it's what they're going through right now is what a lot of teams are going through. It's just so many. I think they have eight new guys. So they're going to be good because Case is not going to settle for anything less. They're going to be good. He's just trying to put the pieces together and get a little, develop some chemistry and figure out who needs the ball, who gets the shots late, who defends. So it's hard to do it like on the fly, so to speak. And that's what's been happening to Fairfield. You met a lot of people, with all the new guys in. But we knew it was going to be a tough game. Like they had been scoring. They had just come off a game, 94 points versus Mount St. Mary. So we knew it was going to be they were going to be an offensive game. So we wanted to kind of get that pace to where we could handle it a little bit. So it ended up being like a half court back and forth game, and they made some dagger threes. We came down and made some plays, and then like you said. I mean, the referees, it was three free throws in the whole game. And lucky for us, we didn't have, I think we had four fouls in the second half with the last 13 seconds. So we just fouled to try to break the clock down.
Right. You had to, I think you fouled like three times just to, or four times to get into the bonus.
So, it worked out for us.
And I don't know if our listeners caught that, but let's go back. That 87 team, that 87-88 team. So you were a freshman on the last Central Connecticut team that beat Fairfield in
Yeah, you know
November of
what? I didn't even know
87-88.
that. Yeah, I didn't even know that. Our compliance director, Amy Strickland, texted me after the game, 1987. And I said, what? And she said, that was the last time we beat Fairfield. I said, oh my goodness, because I was a freshman.
Right,
Oh,
right.
yeah, it was a crazy, I remember, crazy game. I remember that, a crazy game.
Crazy. So you build off momentum. Anytime you went on the road is fantastic. And then you get Quinnipiac in really what was a high scoring affair, Coach, 84-80. So quite different from the game against Fairfield.
Oh yeah, totally different. More up pace. And again, they came into the game not shooting threes well, and they shot the ball pretty good from three yesterday. You know,
Course.
it just happens that way. We wanted to take away the inside. They made some threes. But you and we've had in the 4 years that we've been here as a staff, we've had some really tight games with those guys. We were up 11 our first year. In the second half, and then we had a chance to win the game. They make a three late, I think with like less than 15 seconds, we're gonna make a three to go up one. We get an open look from three late in the game with like 4 seconds on the clock, and we missed it. So we went back and forth with those guys the last couple of years, and then so we knew it was gonna be a tough, hard game. We felt it was gonna be a little bit different because we thought it'd be a little bit more scoring. And Coach Pecora is another guy I'm connected
Yeah.
with. Yeah, when I coached, when I first came back from playing over in Europe, I was coaching AAU, and Coach Pecora and Coach Wright kind of took me under their wing and almost like they're teaching me how to recruit because they were recruiting our guys on our AAU team, New York Panthers. And I just learned so much from those guys. So another great friend of mine forever that we talk a lot, we text a lot during the season.
Wow.
Congrats or whatever. So, we were fortunate to get out of there with a W because they didn't quit. We were up 10 late, and those guys kept charging at us. And we almost gave it every year to hang on for dear lives to win that game yesterday.
Yeah, they can shoot it, but you guys, I mean, on fire, coach. You shot 65% in the second half and 61.2% from the game. That's a season high for you guys.
Yeah, part of those core four guys, we've kind of put in a system offensively where we want to like get that ball moving. And we've had days in practice, even in the summer with the new guys, where the ball really just pops all over the court. And when you get the ball is moving like that, these guys get rhythm shots, they get easy shots, and they see the ball going a little bit, and then it just kind of goes throughout the whole team. And so we've been waiting for a day like that. I've said to them. in the locker room many times. I said, "Fellas, we're leaving points on the table, because in practice, man, we really move, and that ball is popping, and we're playing really good defense. It's fun to watch." And we had stretches yesterday where the ball was really moving, changing sides of the floor. And when you get in a rhythm like that, Devin Hay got in, it's the first play of the game, he makes a three, and he just got him going right away. And then Max Frazier comes off the bench. You know, he hadn't, Momo's out for the game yesterday. Max Frazier comes off and has a 7 for 8 from the field game. So those guys
First
set
career
the tone
start,
for the
first career start. I'm sorry, this season, right?
Yes,
For
first start,
Frazier.
first career start in college. He was a guy who averaged like 8 points a game in high school. He's a classic late bloomer.
Wait,
He's the
wait,
youngest
wait.
guy on
He
our team.
averaged 8 points a game in high school.
8 points a game in high school. He was a late bloomer. Sienna saw him late. They took him late because he was, long, bouncy. But he had really, he played on a good high school team. His high school
Okay.
teammate is at North Carolina. So people saw him, and
6'9",
they took him.
right?
He played last year a lot of the four at Siena, and I watched his film and everything. I said, "Man, he's a class. He's a five. He's definitely a five." He says he's got to get some weight, but he'll be a great five for us. And so when he put his name in the portal, we had a great conversation. We got him, and then in the summertime, you could see the flashes. You could see the things that we saw on film. And this is his second year in college, but he's the youngest guy on our team. We have three freshmen that are older than Max. So
Okay.
he's a classic late bloomer.
So Max Frazier paying dividends in his first career start, 17 points, 9 rebounds, and Devin Hay, you mentioned him, coach, D2 transfer, and what's he had, like 6 consecutive games in double figures, and two out of the last three, he's tied his career high with 24 points, including 24 against Quinnipiac. How great has he been?
Oh man, he's been he and like Devin Hay, like Jordan Jones last year when we got those guys in for the summer, they both struggled. He struggled really bad. Like he wants to hold a ball and try to, dance with the ball and get to the basket. And we want the ball to pop. We want it to move across the floor. And he struggled with it. And Jordan was the same way his first summer. And we got into September, and he had some flashes in practice and watched film. We talked to him, but he was struggling. And then again, I was talking about Jeremy Brown and Ben Wood and Laney Jefferson said, "We got to get him an early look. We want to play for him." And he was really bad early. We were thinking about taking him out of the starting lineup. And he said, "Just get him a play, get him something easy, and maybe to get him going." And we got him an early basket, one of the game like that 5 games ago, and now everything is taking off for him. He's really The ball's going in the basket. So obviously, how these guys in college, they start seeing the ball go in the basket, their defense is better, their rebounding is better. So it's been really taking off for him.
Everything's better. Listen, everything's better when you win. But when you lose and you face adversity, it hasn't all been glory for you. You guys took a thumping earlier this year at Sacred Heart. And another coaching friend, another good friend of yours, Anthony Latina, you guys go down to Sacred Heart and they really give it to you, and but yet you've been able to put that behind you and learn from these losses, coach.
Like I know this sounds cliche and coach speak, but you can't get too high, you can't get too low. And sometimes that we lost the game versus Northeastern. Northeastern was really good. They took it to us in the first half, late in the first half of that game. And we went on an 18-0 run to start the second half, but
Wow.
we were down so far we couldn't get back, we couldn't win the game. And so I think, and this was kind of what doesn't happen with our older guys, but our older guys internalized that loss. They got down, so we carried that loss in the Sacred Heart. And that was one of the things we talked about as a group. I said, "Fellas, you guys are grown men, you're older. We should not get too high on wins or too low on losses. Let's continue to do, we always say, continue to do the right thing. Let's continue to defend, rebound, share the ball, and keep working. Good things are going to happen for us." And I think, those guys, Jaden Brown and Sweatman, are really good in the locker room. So they took that to the locker room, and we got ourselves reset after that Sacred Heart loss, and it's got us back going again.
So, is there a motto for this year's team that you just keep reinforcing with them, or no?
You know, it sounds funny. We always say, "Hey, fellas, we're older, mature. We're playing chess. Everybody's playing checkers. We're playing chess." And I gave him an example. The Providence game. I said, "Guys, we're older. We've seen everything. We know what a high major team looks like. You know, the crowd's gonna go crazy. They make a dunk or a three, whatever. Everybody's all excited. They're gonna run. We'll call a timeout. But we're going to continue to play chess." I said, "We're going to get in the passing lane and get a steal. And we're going to go down, and they're going to have a guy running behind us to block the shot. And we know he's coming for the shot block. We're going to stop, shot fake him, let him go by us, lay the ball up," and said, "We're playing chess." And so, for the most part, those guys have used that phrase about playing chess. And, you know, there's times when the Holy Cross game, I hate to say the word cruising, but we're playing really well at the end of the game. The ball's moving. Our offense was good that day. And we got a little too cute. And Abdul Momo gets dunked on. Takes the ball out of bounds. They denied the passing lane. He stepped in bounds. They got the ball back. So I call a timeout, and the crowd's into the game now. They cut it to, I think, six. We were up at one point, like 17, 18. And I said, "Take a deep breath. We are older. We've seen it happen before. You made a mistake. Let it go. We play chess." And then we proceed to go and, you know, stretch the game out to 11 or 12 or whatever. But it's our guys. And I said this after the Fairfield game. Late in the game, Fairfield was killing us on some of their ball screens. So we wanted to change our coverage on the ball screen. And we're explaining to the guys, "Hey, when it happens on the side, we're doing this. When it happens in the middle, we're doing this." And so, as we're explaining it to him, one of the guys said, "Coach, what are you saying? Say it again." And so I'm getting ready to start and say it again. And then George Strowski says, "Don't worry. Just listen to JB, Jaden Brown. He'll call the coverage. Just listen to what he says." And I was like, I felt like a proud father. I'm like, these guys are grown men. They know how to play basketball. So that's who we've been for the most part this year. Obviously, we have to keep going. We got a big roll down coming up with our conference play now.
I got you, coach. I got you. Take a drink there. You do have a big road coming up ahead, you know, but it just clicked to me why I never made it. I'm still playing checkers and all my other boys are playing chess and they're moving on. So maybe it's time that I play the big boy game too. Hey, how about Dietrich Gymnasium? You know, being a little bit of a home court advantage for you guys, 4-0 this year. You've won 10 in a row in the regular season at home. So, you know, how's the home cooking been in hard hitting New Britain, as we say?
You know, like, our fans have been great. Like, you know, it's always exciting when you come out. I will say this, and I'll say this to the team a lot. I said, "Fellas, I don't know if there's anything better in sports than winning on the road, shutting the other crowd, shutting them up. But also, there's nothing better when you got your crowd behind you and you can just feel the energy. And it's just a six man, they energize you on defense. They enjoy, like, when we pass the ball. Hard hitting New Britain loves grittiness, toughness, and so our guys feed off of that. And it's been a fun atmosphere at home. They really give us that extra juice. We got a game next Sunday at home. You know, I'm sure we'll have a nice crowd there. Another thing, we've had, you know, a lot of our home games, we had a 1 o'clock start, which is an early start. So I'm always telling these guys, "We're getting up early. We're gonna have our breakfast. I want you to take a hot shower. We're gonna get on the court before the game and warm up a little bit because I want you guys fresh." And these guys really embrace that and attack that early start too.
I love it. I love it. So you do have a game coming up, you know, after the Christmas little break here. Johnson and Wales, kind of a, I guess, an exhibition game, aren't they? Division three.
Division three, yep.
And then you start Northeast Conference play, and it seems like the Northeast Conference is evolving each year. And I don't know how much you've been following, you know, the teams and everything, coach, but Chicago State coming in. You lost Merrimack, you lose Sacred Heart. Chicago State's coming in.
Mercyhurst.
Mercyhurst, of course, Stonehill, Lemoyne. So it's an evolving conference and teams that you've never faced before. So what are your thoughts about, conference play right around the corner?
Yeah, I mean, it's coming really fast. We were just talking about our practice schedule. We open up on the road. We go to St. Francis, PA, very hard place to play, well coached, really good offensive team that we're going to have to guard at their place. And then we leave there and we go to Mercyhurst. And Mercyhurst, another excellent team, well coached. They have a kid, I think Jeff Planudis, who I remember him as a senior in prep school, really good player. They play some matchup zone. So we struggled yesterday for like a 3-minute stretch against the Quinnipiac zone. So we're going to have to get prepared for that zone. So it's going to be two tough games in Pennsylvania on the road, on top of the long travel. So yeah, that's going to be a tough battle right from the start. And then, look in our league, Stonehill's playing really well. They're playing really well. They have a kid that we looked at from Cincinnati who was a freshman last year. He had 20 points today. He's a good player, 6'8", can shoot it. They have a transfer, Morgan, from I think he's a Canadian kid. He's another good player. So and they're well coached too. They play a tough, gritty defense, and the way they play offense, you have to really concentrate. So our new guys, Devin Haid and Max, probably haven't seen offense like this, and they make you think on defense. You have to concentrate and stay alert for 30 seconds. So, those guys are good. LIU is good. LIU is much improved. Got a couple transfers. Lemoyne, we have not beat Lemoyne yet. They came into the league last year. They beat us twice. They beat us at the buzzer at our place. And then we went to overtime with them at their place. So again, well, another well-coached team. They shoot the three really well. So our league is tough. Chicago State's gonna be a hard trip. That's gonna be a 2-day trip in Chicago. Coach Spinelli, I know him well too. So the league, I know we got some teams that left and te new teams coming in, but the core of our conference leadership is really good. And they're always making good decisions to try to put, to keep our conference tight. So they've added some really good schools, and I think the NEC is thriving. It's going to be good and going as we go forward.
Yeah, coach, it's great to see the conference, reevolve. You have to evolve every conference in the country from, the number one conference to the 32nd conference, whatever it's what it is now. You have to evolve because you don't know where it's going. But the good thing that I like, coach, is that you're living in the present here. 8-4, great start, continued success this year, and as the coaches probably like to say, you win that last game going into Christmas, I'm sure, you're going to enjoy your Christmas a little bit and get right back to work, I'm sure.
Definitely. The guys, they went home. Yep, most of them went home yesterday after the game. And then we told them, I said, go with your family, enjoy, have a good time. But let's, take a deep breath, and then we'll come back, reset, and we get back to practice and get going again. And we wanna continue going forward. So I'm continue playing chess.
I love it. I love it. And hopefully along the way, there's a checkmate, coach, right in your pocket. All right. Merry Christmas. Thanks for the time. It's great talking to you again, Patrick. And we'll talk to you very soon.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.
And there he is, Patrick Sellers, playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers. Awesome stuff. Every coach, every motivator, every leader looks for an edge, looks for something, some way, physically, mentally, to motivate their team. Patrick Sellers has found something there. Run with it, man. Run, run, run with it. But it's a lot easier to run with it when you have veterans, when you have seniors, when you have players who have been in the program for years and know your system. That is going to be a theme throughout this podcast. So, as we go around the tri-state now, we're going to talk Princeton, Rutgers, St. John's, UConn, Seton Hall. Let's get to all of it and let's begin in New Jersey. Let's begin with Princeton and Rutgers. This was one whale of a game. Where do we begin? Let's begin with Rutgers. Ace Bailey continues to show you that he is an incredible athlete, an incredible NBA talent, but yet continues to take head-scratching shots. A lot of poor shots in the first half, but you know as well as I do, we knew this before the season. Even Jim Calhoun, the Hall of Famer, said it. You've got two Cadillacs in Harper and Bailey, and this is the way you've built your roster. So you're going to have to live and die with them. You're going to have to accept that they're going to take a lot of shots. So when these two take 30 to 40 shots every game, that's what it is. And this game, they took 34 and they only made 15. And Bailey was really, once again, the catalyst for why are you forcing the action? Now, yes, did he hit the three late in the game after the steal that gave Rutgers a brief lead? Of course he did. And that's why you have to live and die with him. All right. Overall, the numbers look good. 15 points, 12 rebounds, two blocks. But yet you feel like he's still not doing enough. All right. Dylan Harper put up numbers that you expect from him. 22 points, five rebounds, two assists. You'd like to see him facilitate more assists. With his talent, he should be getting five, six assists every game. The problem is they're not generating enough from the supporting cast, and it all falls on these two players' shoulders. All right. Jordan Dirkhak is going to give you an honest day's work. He's a glue guy. You know, I love him. He gets to the free throw line. He makes things happen. You know, he's going to give you a hard day's work every single game. But it's not enough to be that glue guy. All right. You need to be able to knock down shots from the outside because Rutgers has very little going on offensively inside. Lathan Somerville is giving you what you can, but you're not getting, you know, 35, 40 minutes out of your center position. You're only getting, at best, 10, 15 minutes of good production on both sides. Rutgers lost this game because they couldn't contain Lee and they couldn't contain Pierce for the second straight year. They torched them. Rutgers did not find a way to contain Lee and Pierce. All right. Lee lit him up. Now, Lee, we'll get to him later, but his final stat line, he almost had a triple double. 21 points, six rebounds, 11 assists. Pierce, double double, 21 points, 14 rebounds. What those two are doing against Rutgers the last 2 years is amazing. I'm going to give you their stats the last 2 years against Rutgers. Pierce, 29 points, 29 rebounds, and six assists. He's not 6'10. He's 6'6, 6'7. And he goes in there and owns the glass. Xavien Lee, 37 points, seven rebounds, 16 assists. Those two, Rutgers could not stop. And late in the game, in the second half, they were getting to the rim at will. And with no rim protector, a la Cliff Amori, Rutgers, if they're struggling against the likes of Seton Hall, and they're struggling against the likes of Kennesaw State, and they're struggling against the likes of Princeton, all right, these are not teams with Big Ten front lines. But even in games against Monmouth when they struggled, or against St. Peter's when they struggled, this is a theme. And I'm really concerned about Rutgers moving forward into the Big Ten without a defensive rim protector and a guy who can draw a double team in the low post. Without that, defenses are putting all their energy into stopping Harper and Bailey. Period. Get ready for it. All right. Without that low post presence. And if you're not knocking down shots, all right, if you're not getting shots for PJ Hayes, if you're not getting shots for Zach Martini, if you're not, getting any production out of Tyson Acuff, who it's time. All right. This is a guy who was the fourth leading scorer in the country last year. And is he injured? Is he not? There's no more time to wait for Tyson Acuff if he's going to have any production on this team. So if you're not shooting the ball from three consistently and drawing attention away from Harper and Bailey and taking advantage of, open shooters, then Rutgers is going to struggle to reach their potential offensively. And at the other end, it's going to affect what they're doing there. Rutgers did more than enough to win this game offensively. It's defensively where they were beat in this game, and that is a red flag. There is no more room for error for this team. None. They're 1-1 in Big Ten play, and the schedule is only going to get tougher for this team because they're going to play Columbia before the break, and that's no gimme. All right. And right now, this team stands at 7-5. And most Rutgers fans were thinking at worst 10-3. We're hoping for, my math is wrong there, 10-2, no worse than 9-3. And here they are at 7-5. There's no more room for error for this team because after Columbia, they're at Indiana, and say what you want, Mike Woodson is over there. You know you have a chance when you're going up against Mike Woodson. All right. They have owned Indiana, but you know the Hoosiers are going to be up for this game, and it is at Indiana. Then they host Wisconsin. Then they host Purdue. Then they host UCLA. Then they're at Nebraska, who's much improved. Then they're at Penn State in a revenge game. Then it's Michigan State. Then it's at Northwestern. January is a gauntlet of a schedule, a gauntlet. And I'm not even going to begin to guess or try to predict a record. They need to get more production from their bench. They need to get shooters shooting and figure out the interior defense because in Big Ten play, they are going to get eaten alive. And this team right now, where they stand is on the outside looking in to the NCAA tournament, facing the Big Ten schedule of January and February. And if this team does not make the NCAA tournament with these two lottery picks, it is an unmitigated disaster of a season. So Steve Peichel needs to figure this out. Get right for Columbia and get ready for Indiana. Now, the other side of the equation, Princeton. What can you say about Mitch Henderson and Brett McConnell? These coaches from Princeton put together a master plan. They got production out of their bench, okay? Unlike Rutgers, Lee and Pierce, the two stars, had a supporting cast. Lee and Pierce and Harper and Bailey essentially negated themselves. But I'll say this, Lee and Pierce collectively played better than Harper and Bailey. But when you're getting guys like Blake Peters scoring 8 points, and guys like Malik Abdullahi getting 8 points and 4 rebounds, right? And Byreal hitting two threes, and Dalen Davis getting 7 points. Collectively, Princeton's team was better than Rutgers. The better team on this day won, plain and simple. They continually attacked the rim. They knew they could get to the rim against this Rutgers defense. Now, listen, Xavier Lee still plays out of control. Xavier Lee should not be taking 22 shots a game. Xavier Lee is out of control at times. But you know you have to live with a guy like this. He's showcasing himself for the NBA. And I'll tell you what, just tone it down a little bit. Instead of taking 22 shots and running around at times and dribbling to no end like a chicken with your head cut off, reduce that. 15 or 16 shots. You don't need to take 22 shots. No way. He still had 11 assists. That's the difference between an upperclassman point guard with a supporting cast and a dynamite five-star freshman point guard with little supporting cast. Harper, 2 assists. Lee, 11. 11. And he still had 21 points. So, Lee, you love him, but he drives you crazy and you have to live with him. Take a few less shots. But they made plays, they got to the rim and knew there was no rim protector there. And late in this game, when Princeton had built a lead and had the ball, late in this game with a 2-point lead, the ending sequence was phenomenal. The ending sequence, if you didn't see it, was something to see, because all you had to do was tune it in with about 20 seconds left. Princeton inbounding the ball at midcourt. Rutgers denied everybody. They're down two. Jeremiah Williams gets the steal. Up ahead to Ace Bailey. Boom, boom. And as soon as he released it, you knew it was going in. Bailey swishes a three. Princeton goes up 82-80. Or you Rutgers goes up 82-80. Princeton brings the ball up and they're running it. And immediately they found the mismatch. They get the ball to Pierce, and Dukac is on him. And a veteran guy like Pierce is just going to do what he does. Rutgers stayed away from Pierce. They didn't double him. They didn't come down and help Dukac. You have a size advantage and an experience advantage in Caden Pierce. It was like he was playing one-on-one in the backyard on a Sunday afternoon. Dribble, dribble, back down, back down, back down, dribble, dribble, layup. Textbook, like your dad mentoring and schooling his 16-year-old son in the backyard. It was that easy. And Dukac is a hell of a defender, hell of a defender. But you're not going to be able to stop that when you don't have the size and strength to match Pierce. I don't care if you're Northeast Conference Defensive Player of the Year or Big Ten Player of the Year. That's not a knock against Dukac. It's a knock against Rutgers' inability to see this, to do something about it, to either have another player defending him who's bigger or double down. Pierce scores, 5 seconds to go. Rutgers inbounds the ball, no timeouts, and all they could get was a desperation three by Harper that barely hit the front of the rim. And for the second year in a row, Princeton beats Rutgers. Color this state orange, okay? Forget about coloring it scarlet. Forget about coloring it blue when Seton Hall is good. All right. We often hear about the winner of Seton Hall and Rutgers coloring it their state, their color, blue or scarlet. No. No. This state for the last 2 years is orange, plain and simple. And how about the play from Blake Peters late in this game? I think it was Lee that hoisted a shot late in this game, and Rutgers was down one possession and trying to get the ball back, and they had cut it to two, and shot clock's winding down, and I think it was Xavien Lee who goes in and drives on Jamichael Davis, and Davis blocked him. So now, if I recall, I think Princeton got the ball out of bounds, and then they get the ball in, and Pierce misses a layup, and out of nowhere, Blake Peters, one of the smallest guys on the court and amongst the Rutgers bigs, and Bailey was in there too. Blake Peters comes down with the rebound. That was a huge play in this game. Blake Peters getting that rebound and taking it away from Rutgers and keeping possession for Princeton. Now, it led to the helter-skelter finish at the end, but that rebound by Pierce was one of the biggest plays in this game. It led to the out of bounds, it led to the Bailey steal, it led to the Pierce layup. But give Blake Peters a ton of credit there, and that's Princeton basketball. Getting plays from everyone. Even Jackson Hickey in there. You can't say enough about this Princeton team and what they did to win this game. So their Christmas dinner tastes oh so savory and good. That's Rutgers. That's Princeton. Let's get to St. John's. The Red Storm are 2-0 in the Big East and came up with a win against Providence that they had to have. We knew the history. We knew St. John's was 1-6 in their last seven trips to the Dunk. It will always be known as the Dunk and not Amica, whatever, Pavilion. Okay. Thank goodness, second half, St. John's showed up in this game. Thank goodness, second half, St. John's. That has been the story of this team this season. St. John's in the second half has outscored the opposition by 131 points. It doesn't matter how poorly they played in the first half. It doesn't matter that they went into halftime with a 13-point deficit. It doesn't matter that Providence, their guards, torched St. John's from the outside. Didn't matter that Providence hit six threes in the first half, that Bensley Joseph and Jaden Pierre had 22 points in the first half and couldn't miss. I think Jaden Pierre didn't even miss a shot or a free throw. It didn't matter that St. John's was turning the ball over, couldn't do anything offensively, looked disconnected, looked like they didn't care. Because when the second half came around, second half St. John's showed up, and second half St. John's won this game yet again. And instead of being on the wrong side of a buzzer beater like they were against Baylor, they were on the right side of a buzzer beater. Why? Because they wanted it. They defended the three. They had offensive rebounds. Zubi Ejiofor had an edge to him, like we've seen throughout this year. When St. John's wins, Zubi has an edge, and Zubi cannot be stopped. Even RJ Lewis, who I was critical of in the second half, I thought, he had a very rough game shooting. RJ Lewis was not good shooting in this game, 5 of 13, was really struggling. But to his credit, in the second half, he was still doing the little things. He was still defending. He was still getting in there and trying to get rebounds. He was getting to the rim, and he never sulked. St. John's as a team never sulked. And Rick Pitino brought that up afterward because he said, as much as we missed from the free throw line, and they missed, right? St. John's missed 15 free throws. 15. And somehow found a way to win on the road when they were down 13 in a place they hadn't won in like 6 years. Why? Because of second chance points. 23 second half or second chance points. 9 offensive rebounds. They not only were getting offensive rebounds, but they were converting them. And Zubi Ejiofor and RJ Lewis were the reasons why they won this game on the road. And even when they surged to a lead late, and even when Providence had the ball late, and Providence had not hit a three in the second half, Providence was like 1-0 for 7 from three. St. John's had shut it down. Whatever happened in the first half was behind them. St. John's had the lead in the final seconds, up three, and Bensley Joseph hit an absolute bomb of a shot to tie the game. So now the dunk is going crazy. Game's tied at 70. And St. John's brings the ball up the court. Got a really good look. A really good look out of Davon Smith. Hits the front of the rim. And Zubi Ejiofor out-muscles. It might have been Essendako or whoever it was, whatever big Providence tried to throw out there. And Zubi just absolutely plows him, grabs the rebound, puts it in as the clock strikes zero and the buzzer goes off. And St. John's euphoria wins the game on a buzzer beater as Zubi Ejiofor, I mean, as down as he was in the Bahamas after, he didn't cost his team the game, but I'm sure he felt that way. After missing the two free throws, after not getting the offensive rebound late, and losing to Baylor the way they did, Zubi Ejiofor, talk about redemption. Could not be more happier for the big guy. Wins it for St. John's. An amazing game, amazing performance. And watch that replay again. I'm telling you. Don't even look at Davon Smith. Just watch Zubi. I swear to God, it was like you're watching a blocking sled. It was like you're at a football practice in the middle of August, and the offensive linemen are the defensive linemen or whoever the linemen are just taking that blocking sled and driving it back 10 yards. That shot was going up, and Zubi just pushed the Providence big man back 5, 10 feet to a point where he could grab the rebound and put it back. That's big man basketball. That's big boy basketball. The refs let him play, and that's just all strength, all upper body, all lower body, all will. Put himself in a position to make a play and win the game. And Rick Pitino said it afterward. He's like, the guys never got down. All I said to him was, forget about the missed free throws, forget about the missed shots, just defend, just win the game. Forget about the free throws, just win the game. That was the theme throughout. St. John's found a way to win the game on the road in the Big East. That counts for everything. When you're not at your best, when your leading scorer is not playing well, when Kadari Richmond is on the bench for much of this game, you found a way to win. That's all that matters. Doesn't matter how, forget about the net, forget about the RPI. I know it matters how much you win by, But what matters more, what matters most is that you won the game. And if you want to be an NCAA tournament team, if you want to go where you feel like this team can go, whatever it is, Sweet 16, Final Four, whatever it is, you have to win a game like this when Providence is not a great Providence team, when they were missing their best player in Bryce Hopkins. Oh, by the way, all right, they're missing their best player in Bryce Hopkins. You cannot lose this game. St. John's found a way to win, and now they are 2-0 in the Big East with the likes of UConn, with the likes of Marquette, and with the likes of who? Georgetown. Did I just say Georgetown is 2-0? Yes, I did. That brings me to Seton Hall. Oh my. The more we see this team, the more you see the problems. They manifest themselves throughout. No matter what happens with the Seton Hall team, it's a broken record. It just keeps happening every single game. Every single game. This team builds a first half deficit. You cannot come to your Big East home opener with a really good crowd days before Christmas against a Georgetown team that, listen, you're at home. You should win this game. You cannot go down 14-3. Same story as Oklahoma State. Same things that have plagued this team all season long. And now they're spending so much energy trying to catch up and trying to get back into this game. And it's just not enough with this team and the makeup of this roster. So where do I begin? Let's just begin with the obvious. There's no go-to guy and there's no point guard. Let me repeat. There's no go-to guy and there's no point guard. You cannot construct a roster and expect the team to win in major college basketball or any level of college basketball without a point guard. Shaheen Holloway thought he would get a point guard and develop a point guard with Zion Harmon and Garway Duo. It has been a disaster. Garway Duo did not even play, I think, the entire second half. I don't recall Garway Duo playing at all in the second half. As a matter of fact, he played 8 minutes in the entire game and was benched. So who does that leave you with? It leaves you with Dylan Adeyewusu. It leaves you with Chauncey Jenkins as your point guard. Look, Seton Hall fans, anytime this team has been good, has been great, you've had point guards. All right, I don't care if you go back to Gerald Green, James Major, right? Brian Caver, on and on and on, all the way to Quincy McKnight. All the way to Kadari Richmond, you need a point guard. You need somebody to say, go make us a play. What do you think Rutgers did with Dylan Harper at their building against Seton Hall? All Steve Peichel did was, Dylan, go make us a play. All right. Sure, there's a play in there somewhere. Dylan, go make us a play. Okay. Who were you looking to? 10 seconds left. You're down one. You're looking at the Seton Hall roster. Who are you looking to? And that's what happened in the end of this game. Everybody knew the ball was going to Isaiah Coleman. Everybody. It had to. Isaiah Coleman was having a career night. 25 points, 9 rebounds, 7 offensive rebounds, was killing Georgetown. He had an amazing second half. 16 points in the second half. This is how Seton Hall got back in the game. 3 minutes and 36 seconds left in this game. Television timeout. Georgetown up 61-50. And Seton Hall goes on a 10-0 run. They pressed. They stole the ball. They got layups. They had shots. They had turnovers. They defended. They did everything they could to win this game. Georgetown did everything they could to give the game away. So now it's 10 seconds left, and what happened next will go down as a microcosm of Seton Hall's season. Scotty Middleton inbounds the ball to Dylan Adeyewusu, and the play is to have Dylan dribble the ball over half court and a dribble handoff to Isaiah Coleman and get some action going. And he comes around a curl and go to the hoop and make a play. Well, you've seen the play by now a million times. And if you haven't, what happens is Dylan comes over half court, looks towards Coleman, and is in position to hand the ball off, but Coleman is being denied. He's being face guarded by Williams. Coleman throws a little hedge one way. He can't shake his defender. So instead of Coleman curling and still going to try to get the ball, he stays away. He can't shake his defender. He doesn't go get the ball. Adeyewusu now knows time's ticking down, 6-5, and Adeyewusu tries to make a play, loses the handle, kicks the ball. Georgetown gets the steal. They don't even get a shot off. And the clock runs zero. And everyone's like, what? That's what you can get? Well, Shaheen Holloway said afterward, that was the play. The play was either to option one was Coleman, option two was Dylan Adeyewusu. Dylan Adeyewusu was having a horrendous game offensively, horrendous. Couldn't throw the ball in the ocean. And if Dylan Adeyewusu is your second option, this team is in deep trouble, and we already know they're in trouble. What happened to Chauncey Jenkins? Why has this player, who was your leading scorer, lost his confidence? That's what Shaheen Holloway needs to figure out. In a game like this, where Adeyewusu was horrendous offensively, it should have been Isaiah Coleman and Chauncey Jenkins. Why not inbound the ball to Coleman and let him dribble up? And then if they double him, have some action for Chauncey Jenkins. I would much rather have Jenkins and Coleman at the end of the game. And I'm sure if Shaheen Holloway had a chance to figure this out all over again, he would do things differently. But how about this? Instead of having Coleman just stand there and try to get open, why aren't you running him off a double screen on the baseline? Why aren't you running him off a single screen and then a double screen at the elbow? All right. Why isn't he starting in one corner and curling up and around? You see it all the time. It was a poorly designed play from the get-go because Coleman never touched the ball. Your best player, who had 25 points in the game, never touched the ball. End of story. That's on the coach, and that's on Coleman. Coleman said, I want the ball in the huddle. You didn't even make an effort to go get the ball. And the coach didn't design a good enough play to get you the ball. So the end of the play, the end of the game is on Holloway, and it's on Coleman, period. That's not what lost the game, but that's ultimately what lost the game. And now Seton Hall has had four games this year: Hofstra, Fordham, Rutgers, and now Georgetown, that they have blown it on the final possession. Fordham, they blew defensively, but in the final minute, they turned the ball over. They kicked that game away and couldn't get a stop. Hofstra, they had the final possession, down one, two, whatever it was, and they come up with a desperation corner three because the play was snuffed out. Rutgers, they couldn't defend Harper. They're still trying to defend him. They're still trying to find Dylan Harper. And now this, who was your go-to guy? It should be Isaiah Coleman. The problem is they have no facilitator. They have no facilitator that if the play breaks down, the option is go make a play. So now, what can you do with the team you have that has no true point guard playing any semblance of basketball and no go-to player? One game in the next 16 days. They play Xavier on New Year's Eve, and then I think they don't play until DePaul on January 8th. One game in 16 days to try to figure out who's going to be my go-to guy And what player on this roster can give me anything at point guard? Get Jassim Felton out there. He showed you what he can do. A month ago, Jassim Felton came out of Charleston and Shaheen Holloway was praising Felton. I need to get him more minutes. Then Felton disappears. Why? Because apparently he wasn't bringing it in practice. Apparently he doesn't have lateral quickness because that's what Shaheen said. But you know what? That kid's showing me something offensively. He had guts to knock down shots in the first half. All right. He had a putback in the second half. The kid hustles. The kid makes plays. He needs to learn. Put him out there. You're going to lose with Dual. So why not lose with a player who you know could have a future with this program in Jassim Felton? Let him play. I'm not saying let him start, but he needs to play 20 minutes every game. You need to develop Felton. You need to develop Coleman, the sophomores. Coleman, the freshman, Felton, Middleton. These are the players of your future. These are the players you have to keep and you have to develop. And give me more Gus, okay? Because that guy's got heart. He's got desire. He may not have the athleticism or the talent, but that guy makes plays. Give me Gus Yeldon too, all right? Get these guys minutes and figure out a way to get them in the rotation and contribute to this team because Seton Hall fans would rather lose with these underclassmen than lose with overpriced upperclassmen who couldn't make it elsewhere and aren't making it here, period. Finally, let's get to UConn. We end on a high. UConn pulls out a gutsy win at Butler. And Hinkle Fieldhouse is always a tough place to play. UConn had a tough time and won there last year. They had a tougher time and won there this year. Butler has players, but they're in a little bit of a rut. But listen, they're well coached. I love Pierre Brooks. I love Jamil Telfort. They have a fifth-year senior and Patrick McCaffrey. I mean, they gave UConn everything they could handle. And UConn jumped out to a big lead in this game. Here was the key to me. UConn built that 14-2 lead. Butler never led in this game. Several opportunities in the second half, Butler had a chance to tie or take the lead. The best they could do was tie. They never took the lead in this game. And down the stretch, the plays were made by who? The veterans, Alex Caravan, Hassan Diarra, and the super frosh, Liam McNeely. They made the plays late. And remember when UConn beat Xavier at home and unsolicited his last comment of the game, I'm sure you read it or heard about it. Sean Miller, head coach of Xavier, unsolicited, just went out of his way to call Alex Caravan one of the best winners in college basketball. He went back to his days of playing in the Big East and playing at high level at Pitt and compared Caravan to one of the greatest winners of all time and one of the greatest dynasties of all time, Duke and Christian Laettner and Bobby Hurley, compared Caravan's winning attitude to Hurley and Laettner. And that's an excellent comparison because all Bobby Hurley did was win. All Christian Laettner did was win. And that's what Alex Caravan is doing. And late in this game, when it got tight, when it was a one-point game and or it was tied, Alex Caravan hits a three to give UConn a four-point lead. And then when Butler hangs around and McCaffrey makes a layup to cut it to two, it was Hassan Diarra. Shot clock winding down, makes a play, gets the ball. Instead of settling for a three, he drives, hits it off glass. And the senior, the super senior, Hassan Diarra makes a play to put UConn up two, four. And then again, Butler hanging around. McCaffrey cuts it to two. And who hits a three? Alex Caravan. UConn hit their free throws late. When you have winners, when you have a winner like Alex Caravan, when you have a winner like Hassan Diarra, guys who make plays, guys who you can say, all right, go make a play. All right. Give Dan Hurley Seton Hall's roster and let's see how good he can make this Seton Hall team because he's not going to do any better than Shaheen Holloway. All right. But look at the team and what he's able to assemble around him with player development, with a bigger NIL pool. It's not just about how much money you have, it's about how you're spending it and the quality of it, right? I've said that time and time again. They've retained their players. They've had players that are in the system for years. Hassan Diarra has been in the system 3 years. Alex Caravan's been in the system 3 years. Samson Johnson returns. Solo Ball returns. These guys come back at UConn because they know they're going to get paid and they know they're in a winning program. They know they're going to play for a national championship. But you need that player retention and player development. And then for the second year in a row, when you bring in a five-star, super freshman, top 10 McDonald's All-American, last year they had Steph Castle. This year they have Liam McNeely. When you can bring in a superstar, mature 18-year-old kid who is able to handle the pressure cooker of UConn and playing big games, Liam McNeely is there. He has it. He has it. He is a leader at 18. He is not afraid of the big moment. We saw what he did at Madison Square Garden against Gonzaga. When you have players around that you can just say, go make a play, it's a hell of a lot easier. And it makes you look like a much better coach than if you don't. And Alex Caravan, Hassan Diarra, Liam McNeely made winning plays late. All right. And that's why UConn is 2-0 in this Big East. That's why Georgetown is 2-0. That's why Marquette is 2-0. That's why St. John's is 2-0. Their veteran players made big plays late. You're not going to win every game. Some games you're going to have win by blowout. But when you need to make plays late, defensively or offensively, who are you going to look when you call timeout? Who are you going to look in the eye and say, go make a play? Who are you going to look at in the eye and say, go make a big play? UConn has it. St. John's has it. Princeton has it. Rutgers has it, but they need more help around it. Seton Hall doesn't have it. Unfortunately for the Pirates, they need to figure out what they need to do with this roster. The rest of them are going to enjoy their Christmas dinners. They're going to look forward to those next games on New Year's Eve or thereabouts. And they will have time, if they want their figgy pudding, to have that too. And that is a wrap on this podcast. Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Keep spreading the word. All right. I do appreciate you listening. I need you to keep spreading the word and share this podcast with your friends. Tell everybody about the Tri-State College Basketball Podcast. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy holidays, everyone. Enjoy the games. My name is Brian Dean of Ellis. So long.